Welcome to this podcast produced by Imagine, your resource for early childhood music therapy. Imagine is produced by Della Vista Publisher and can be found on the web at www.imagine.musictherapy.biz. The title of this podcast is The Power of Participation, Making Music Therapy More Meaningful for Families, and features Dr. Deanna Hansen-Eppermite in an interview with Dr. Petra Kern. Hello, I'm Dr. Petra Kern, the editor of the Imagine eJournal. Welcome to Dr. Deanna Hansen-Eppermite. Thank you for joining me today on this Imagine podcast, Deanna.
Hi, Petra. Thank you for having me. I'm really excited to be here and talk to you a little bit about young people and music and their families.
Yeah, thank you so much for coming back. You have been an Imagine author for many years, also a featured author before. So our listeners might already know you, but for those who are new in the field or don't know about your work, let's get started on sharing about yourself and your connection to early childhood music therapy.
Okay, great. In thinking about this, I have really been an early childhood music therapist my entire career. My first job out of internship was as a preschool teacher in a music school. I was doing the music classes in a music school in my community. And this was kind of happening at the same time that I was having children myself. And so there's this really strong connection, not only because I'm a music therapist, but music and the experiences that I had with the children that I work with, my own children. But then my career kind of evolved at this music school to start infant and parent classes, and that moved into infant and toddler classes and infant and preschooler classes that I did at this community school that really changed and shaped kind of how I think about music and the relationship between music and family. So it's really a very long ago. I think about this where my children are now 30 and 26. So I've been doing music therapy. I've been a music therapist, and I've been doing music therapy with in an early childhood context for 30 years, which is kind of hard to believe. It's a long time.
Yes. And in those 30 years also, Deanna, you have actually shaped how we work with families, with parents in a therapeutic setting. And that's why I would like to ask you, why do you think it's so important to have parents involved in music therapy sessions?
I think, oftentimes when you think about music therapy sessions, you think about it as just the client, and you're working with just the client in need. And a lot of my early week work that when I moved then from the community setting into the hospital setting, oftentimes I'd see young children who are hospitalized without their parents. But when you had the families involved, it changed their experience of their child. They could see their child doing things that they weren't seeing in other examples of their care. And they also, we could incorporate them into doing these music-based activities with their children that they didn't necessarily have the opportunity to do while their child was hospitalized. Now, earlier today, I was talking about a really pivotal patient that I worked with in my career who was hospitalized for a very long time. I started working with this little person at 9 months of age who was hospitalized due to a heart defect. And we worked together till he was almost four. He was hospitalized for a very long time and had a lot of complex needs. And the thing that became really pivotal is that I saw the parents really struggling with this long-term hospitalization and the challenges that their child was facing to their health. And they had these very distinct roles. You know, mom was more of the caregiver and nurturing and there to do the daily cares and around. But then dad was the person that was handling the financial things. And so, one of the more pivotal moments I had was dad coming to visit his son while we were doing the music therapy session, but he was sitting in the chair and he was very disengaged. And by just saying, hey, we could use some extra support here to help this little guy do some hand over hand. Could you do this? And inviting him into the music therapy session changed his experience with his child, but also showed them he could do some playful things with this child who wasn't showing the developmental capacity that your child, that you're expecting your child to do, who isn't compromised very severely with health issues. So the parent relationship, and even in my early community-based things, these parents were using music as in ways to change and shape the feelings and the experiences in their home, and they carried those ex early childhood experiences through their children's older years, which is really important that it became this really kind of central feature of the family in making music together, and how it was a really useful tool to interact with your their children throughout their lifetime.
That's really a beautiful example, Diana, which illustrates why it's so important to have parents work together. Since you have been so long in the field and know the history where we came from as early childhood music therapists to today, I want to ask you a historical question. And that is, I remember when I was doing my dissertation, also working with families and with young children on the autism spectrum, it was not considered as being music therapy because I was not directly in the therapeutic relationship with the client because I was coaching a caregiver in this situation to actually work during the day with the child. Can you comment on where we have been and how far we have come and why this is important today?
Yes, I think it's really interesting because the way in which we define music therapy can really be, I think, more expansive than it has traditionally been. And the music therapist has a wide role in being a coach, in being a supporter, in providing direct services. And so there are lots of different roles that we can take. I think in the context of families, one of the things that's really shifted is, we talk about this idea of family-centered care and making families the kind of the pivotal pieces of this relationship. And yet in our healthcare system in the United States, families aren't always as available. And we kind of are, some of the things that I've seen, it feels like we're giving kind of this nod to family-centered care, but we're not actually including them in the decision making. So and as I've grown, both as a clinician but also as a researcher, one of the things that I'm really noticing is it's really important to include the family voice as well as the child's voice in the context of what we're doing, how they're accepting it, and how it's meaningful to them. And what we might think as a music therapist, what's meaningful to a family, that might not actually be what really is the meaningful experience. So I think some of the ways things have changed historically is us doing a better job of incorporating that voice. And we're really like some of the work in the neonatal intensive care is really looking at family-centered care and how can we make the how can we provide the opportunity to create agency in the parent to be that person that's providing the music, and that the music therapist is the support person and helping to guide and coach. That's really important because the family member is the person or the people that are going to be with that child more than one or two times a week when they come for therapy. And so if we think about our music therapy experiences as being very targeted in the moment when they come for therapy, but then providing support materials or activities that the family can do outside of that therapy session, those are really important strategies because we can't be there all the time, nor should we be. The family is the most important person, and that interaction with their child in a music context is really important to their development.
You actually mentioned this right now, but I want to key in a little bit more. What do you think then about the cultural values and the traditions influencing the ways of family engaged with music therapy?
There's some interesting things that are happening and some kind of things that I'm experiencing and like some of my own research that is giving me pause to kind of wonder about the culture and music. And one of the things that I see just out in public is the use of devices like iPads and phones that are being used to interact with your child. And so I find myself pausing and going, how is that impacting development when we're just handing them a device and we're giving them a web page, a YouTube video to watch and interact with, and yet we're not interacting with that child. And so that I think as we have more technology available to us, it's a really valuable tool, but it shouldn't be a substitute for that face-to-face interaction. So that's one of the cultural trends that I've kind of noticed. I think also music is so ubiquitous in society, and it's really available to us all the time through our devices. But it's in the society; it's just within the society. And I wonder if we're just kind of taking it for granted sometimes and not really noticing how powerful of a medium it can be. And are we doing things in our homes with our young children that are beyond having recorded music on or watching music-based videos, but are we actually taking their spontaneous vocalizations and putting them into a song with them, or following their lead as they're doing spontaneous singing? Are we singing with them in the car or when we're giving them baths? Are we using songs as ways to describe things? And so I think as we look at our culture, some of the easy things are it's really accessible, but also we're not slowing down enough sometimes to just do that interactive piece and having music in the day-to-day experiences that are really important to long-term development for your child. For example, conversational turns and doing it through music is a really important thing for developing language in young children and giving them those prerequisite skills. And it changes that interaction, and it's an important piece. So I kind of I'm curious, and I'm just noticing things in our culture that sometimes I'm a little bit like, is that helpful, or not?
Yeah, all in balance, and probably what you always say, the intentional use of music. Your example you have given of parents using music, for instance, in the car. So that means we are actually becoming more a coach to the parents, which you mentioned already, or a consultant to the team working with the child. Can you explain what coaching means and what are the steps of doing this? How what's your method of coaching parents?
So I'm going to back up just a little bit because I think one of the things that we still could do better as music therapists is when we want to coach or support our families in the context that they're in, whether it's the home, whether it's the hospital, whether it's the community. I would like to see us do a better job, and this is me. I really want to understand how and why music is actually affecting change. So, I think my coaching is better when I have a better sense of why and how I'm using music as this modality to create change. So, one of the things that I've learned in my coaching is I have to really First off, I have to really think about how I'm talking about the music in a context that the family can connect with. So it might start off with, tell me a little bit about how what music is in your home, and kind of getting a sense for them about how open they are to having music in their home, how they think about music, what their values are related to music, and do they use their voice for music or other instrumentation? Then in my coaching, so it's I find the coaching piece as more of a this kind of interactive communication and collaboration with the family. What do you notice about your baby that things are going well? What are the things that you see that the baby really enjoys? What might be some of the challenges that you're faced with? And then how can we kind of shape those experiences? Then, based on what sense that I'm getting from the family about how much information that they want, I will then provide additional information and resources. So this could look very different. You could get a really good sense of a parent when you enter a room and how they greet you when you enter. I'm thinking of the hospital context, when you enter that hospital room and how they are interacting with you. So I'm thinking of two parents kind of in the same time period, one where I entered the room and the parent was very bright and, oh yeah, tell me more, I'm really interested in this. And then In our conversation, discovering that she didn't really sing to her children. She had other children in addition to this infant, but she didn't really know what to sing. And so I provided her with some songs. I provided her with the recording of the song so she could listen to me singing the songs. I modeled the songs and then came back a week later and she was singing these songs with her baby, but then she remembered a song that her mom sang to her, right? So she was pulling in that historical context. During the same period of time, another parent was really hesitant to us coming into the room. And so it really became this, you know what? Now's not a good time. I can check on you later. And then following up with that parent. And we eventually got to this place where the music interaction wasn't about her and her baby. It was more about her and how could we use music to facilitate her comfort in the environment and her agency to ask for what she needed for her baby. And that then translated to how she was interacting with her baby. And we saw this transformation of, her kind of being very closed to her being open, and then that translating to, oh, you know what? I am willing to try these other services that I've said no to, because she felt like that she had agency. So I think probably my coaching strategies, if I really spent time looking at patterns, I would find some very distinct patterns in my coaching strategies. But I really feel like it's kind of getting a sense of what's happening in the environment? How much information can they take in at a given time? How can I talk to them in a very, in a simplistic way with increasing complexity as they're understanding what we're doing and how it's meaningful and informative to the baby's development. And then the other thing I find is visuals are really helpful. Having pictures or something that they can hold on to, like the audio recording of the songs that I've provided for them. Or a visual representation of the song, even if it's just the words, or if they don't read music, the notes mean nothing. So kind of showing a contour picture of the melody. So the tools, the visuals, and other tools that are giving them information, really reading their cues and how to best support them, and then providing them with just the right of amount of information so they don't become over stimulated with the information that I could give them because I could talk about this forever.
Yes, and if the listeners would see us, they would see me nodding here all the time because you beautifully described what coaching is all about: being in the moment, looking at the interaction, giving feedback on the observations you have given, asking questions. So it's more collaboration between the parents versus, and then the demonstration, you say, the modeling, then giving resources to go deeper into it or what they can use at home. So all of that is actually a coaching model.
Well, and I think the other piece to that is letting go of it being about me at all, right? Not feeling hurt, not having hurt feelings if they don't want services or they don't want to, they just want the surface level thing. They don't care. Like not having any sort of ego about it myself. And then, yeah, just being in the moment and being really, really present without my own ego in place.
Let's talk about the difficult things. So, what are some challenges you have encountered? I can see them already in your talking, but with the parent engagement in music therapy in particular, and how have you worked around those issues?
Wow. There are some really interesting challenges. I think this can be both in the community setting and in the healthcare setting, like in the hospital environment. How much a person already values music seems to be an indicator of how much they're willing to engage in music therapy. And I don't, this is a phenomenon that I've just really started paying attention to in the last couple of years, but I'm really asking myself, is this person engaged in music therapy because they need music therapy or because they like music and they think music is a useful tool or has power, right? Like if they're already thinking about that, that is an easier door in to providing services. The challenges that I've encountered are those people that music is it's nice, but that therapy thing, I don't know. And so those are the families where it's particularly hard to kind of gauge their level of interest and whether they really want to hear about the service, even like being able to explain the service to them or what we're doing, like in an intervention research project, for example. So I think that's a really hard challenge. And one of the things that I've really been working on, both in my own work and myself, but also with students and research assistants, is that first approach. How are we engaging with the family? How are we reading their cues before we even knock on the door? How are we reading the cues of the environment and using that information to just go, hey, we're just going to drop off a little information for you. We'll be back. It looks like you're busy, or not even engaging. And sometimes that's really hard because we can go back to a hospital room multiple times and never make contact with the family. So the challenge, I think, has been to how do you get people to be interested in music therapy if they don't already have value for it? That's a really hard challenge. And I've started wondering and reading some of our literature and seeing presentations where we're not seeing big changes in outcomes. Is that because most of the people involved in our work are already doing some of the things that are important to be doing? So I'm currently trying to recruit participants, parents, and infants for a study that's looking at boosting parents' engagement with their infants to foster joint attention gestures and vocalizations, these pre-linguistic skills. And we're really having some challenges with recruitment as we're looking at families who may be at risk for this area because of high stressors in their environment, whether it's socioeconomic or racism or other environmental factors, you know, some of these and not having any social supports, feeling stressed out. And we're really having trouble doing that and recruiting these families. And some of it, I think, is that the providers we're going through to help recruit the families may not also have buy-in for music therapy. So I think sometimes we have some hurdles that are not just related to the family, but are also related to the context in which we are situated. So, how much do the medical staff and the nursing staff on a neonatal intensive care unit really understand about what music can do in a therapeutic context versus, and that's nice and that's enrichment, and you just come in and play with the babies. And then the community context, how much do other providers think, okay, what you're doing is actually has some validity to it and has some evidence to it so that we can show that it actually can work? Because parents and families there's a lot happening and we're all very busy and it's really hard to take the extra time. So those are some of the challenges that I've found, and I'm not sure I have any clear answers yet. I just find myself really thinking about them and then approaching my strategies with those things in mind.
Well, you gave already a nice example at the beginning, I think, how you overcame that the challenge with the parent, the father, by just saying, "Can you give me a hand?" And people want to be helpful, right? To draw them actually into the process of the therapeutic moment here, be it that it just that it holds the child or not necessarily singing yet, getting him to hum or pointing out the heartbeat as a rhythm or something like that. So I think you already gave that example. I'm just curious, you as a researcher, I think many of the young people going into their master thesis or doctoral studies. So how do you overcome that recruiting issue? What's your advice?
Cool. The recruiting issue is really kind of fascinating. We've been playing, and this is, you know, even in terms of trying to get to build referrals in the clinical context, right? So some of the strategies that we're looking at is going directly to the providers and providing and doing a workshop with them that shows kind of what's this intervention about and how are we, this is where understanding the how and the why of the music, how are we directly trying to impact this, these pre-linguistic skills in this particular research project. So getting their buy-in that, oh, this should work, but also checking to see how their acceptability. So I think some of the strategies that I'm working on is pivoting a little bit from only focusing on recruiting parents to then also getting the perceptions of the providers that
The
might make
gatekeepers.
the gatekeepers. Yes, they're the gatekeepers. And if they're not making a referral for a research project or a clinical program, then we don't have a service, right? So we need to be able to engage with them and get their sense of what they think music therapy is and what it isn't. And then how can we provide this information about interventions that are focused on particular outcomes different than, you know, I am going to be here as a family support system. So there are, this goes back to that kind of the role of the music therapist that we were talking about earlier. We can have multiple roles, and we need to understand how to navigate those roles and when we want to provide direct service for an intervention, and then what's the intervention that we're going to provide versus, hey, this parent really needs some support, and I'm going to be there for the parent, and we may use music that's meaningful to the parent to provide that support system so that they can be more readily available to engage with their infant in a meaningful way. So that's one of the strategies, is looking at not just worrying about the recruitment, but maybe we have to back up a little bit and think about the acceptability from the provider's perspective. And then in terms of just intervention research, I'm also backing it up a little bit and thinking about how can we get the music therapist perspective. So in a different study, two different music therapists were doing implementing the intervention that was manualized, and some of the challenges that they had with that really started me thinking about, oh, we need to be asking the music therapist, one, do you buy into this intervention? Do you think it has validity? And then we also want to measure how the music is being implemented and these other therapist behaviors are being implemented in addition to just, did you do number one, two, three, four of the strategies? And it's important to get the music therapist perspective as stakeholders too, before we're just trying to implement things. And that gathering, I guess, the wisdom of all stakeholders, including the infants. So, you know, when you have a grant-funded project and it's not going exactly the way you idealized it, you have to pivot. And so one of the ways that I'm looking at this idea of acceptability is most studies that look at acceptability look at it from the parent perspective, and very few, especially in early childhood, look at it from the young child's perspective. So we're looking at ways that we can actually code the infant behaviors to show their level of engagement and tolerance. And that's not well documented in music therapy, and it's not well documented in even early childhood literature. What are the infant's or the young child's perspectives on, do I like what's happening to me right now?
So to close this interview with you, you have actually given some advice now for researchers how to recruit, and I think those are also advices for clinicians how to actually get access to provide music therapy services, so that intervention study in implementation. Now that you mentioned actually the young child, and our topic is the parents, so what is your message for young children, why music therapy would be nice for them? So what are you looking for them to understand of why music therapy helps them? And then the final piece of it, what piece of advice would you give the parent to become involved in music therapy?
Okay. I mean, I think from the young child's perspective, you know, we have innate musicality in our bodies when we are born. We respond rhythmically, right? We as we learn to vocalize, we're doing things spontaneously. And there is this aspect of musicality within us. And so as musical beings, as a young child, being involved in music therapy can help foster that musicality, but also be a preventive intervention to what could potentially be later developing complexities, right? So it helps to kind of just boost our development. And I think that's the same message for families that being engaged in music therapy, you know, sometimes we have a clear diagnosis, and that then the music, because of its multimodal and multisensory capacities, using that as a modality for intervention can be really powerful to helping your child develop, but also it gives you as a parent a way to interact with your child that's engaging and interesting and playful, and not always, you know, about just putting food on the table and changing diapers and taking care of them, but actually being present and being playful with your child. And I think those are some really important ways that music is contributing to this overall well-being, in our young families and our young children.
Well said, Deanna. Thank you very much for participating in this interview. I enjoyed learning about your ever-evolving knowledge and experiences, and it's really great to talk with you. Thank you.
Thank you, Petra, for asking me. It was really fun to be here.
Thank you for listening to this Imagine podcast produced in 2025.